Okay, this is a joint work with Srikanth Kandala, my advisor Dina Katabi, and Professor Bruce Maggs. As you all know, BGP is the routing protocol that binds together the internet. However, a well-known problem with BGP is that when a link fails and BGP is searching for an alternative path, you see significant packet loss. Craig Labovitz was the first one to do a large-scale study looking at this problem. He injected route changes into the internet and looked at the performance to a large set of destinations. And what he saw was up to 30% packet loss from 2 minutes or more. A number of studies have been done on this problem since then, looking at various aspects of it. At last year's SIGCOM, we saw that the problem occurs even for domains dual home to tier one providers. We've also seen that it happens even for popular prefixes. And this isn't just a problem of packet loss. It actually affects real applications. In a study of interdomain VoIP calls, we found that 50% of VoIP disruptions were highly correlated with BGP updates. And these disruptions occur often enough that 6% of one-hour phone calls were prematurely disconnected. But if you think about this, this problem is really ridiculous. We've designed all this redundancy into the network, and yet, BGP is unable to take advantage of it for tens of seconds up to minutes after a link first fails. And so our goal is simple. We want to ensure that ASs stay connected as long as the underlying physical network is connected. Traditional approaches to this problem have focused purely on the idea of reducing the convergence time, under the assertion that a reduced convergence time leads to a reduced period of badness. We take an alternate approach to this problem. We say, BGP is going to take a while to converge. It's going to leave ASs without an available path for some period during this convergence. But that's not the real problem. The problem is that we allow this to affect forwarding during that time. And so we say, don't worry about what's happening at the routing layer. Ensure that forwarding works underneath this during the period of convergence by forwarding packets on pre-computed failover paths. So why take this approach of focusing on forwarding? We do it for two reasons, one technical and one architectural. Technically speaking, real-time applications can be affected by just a few seconds of outage. And trying to get the entire internet to converge in just a few seconds is going to be extremely difficult to do. Most obviously, this is just because the internet is large. But additionally, this is because BGP's convergence is limited by a set of timers. Now, these timers can be reduced, but it's been shown that the optimal setting for them is very network dependent, and setting them too low can cause an exponential amount of update traffic. Architecturally speaking, strict timing constraints like this can limit our ability to innovate the BGP protocol. Let's say, for example, we wanted to consider a BGP decision algorithm which took into account the load on various links in an attempt to avoid using overloaded links. Such a protocol is considering a much larger decision space, and so it might take longer to converge. And are we not going to consider such innovations just because of a strict focus on convergence time? So our contribution is to take this simple idea of failover paths and use it to adapt BGP in a way that allows us to guarantee no BGP-caused packet loss. And we provide this guarantee with very low overhead. In particular, just like BGP, each AS will advertise at most one path to each neighbor. Our simulations show that on a link failure, we can reduce the percentage of disconnected ASs from 22% down to zero. So let's dig into this problem a little bit. What is it that really causes the transient disconnection during BGP convergence? To do that, let's look at an example. And for our example, let's imagine a world where our illustrious PhD chairs, who may be here or not, Peter and Hari, have decided to start their own ISPs. Decided to forget this whole academic thing. Let's go make some money. Let's start an ISP, because that's the way to make money these days. Peter's done quite well. He's able to negotiate peering relationships with a couple of tier one providers. Hari didn't do quite as well. He's forced to buy service from Peter and AT&T. However, he is able to milk his MIT relationship and convince MIT to buy service from him. Luckily, MIT also buys service from a tier one provider as well. Now, remember that BGP is a destination-based protocol. And so path advertisement and convergence happens independently for each destination. So for the context of this talk, I'm going to focus on a single destination. And for our example, let's focus on MIT as that destination. So initially, let's say all the AS's are forwarding along the yellow paths to the destination. Now recognize that all of Hari's providers are using him to get to MIT. And also remember that with BGP, an AS will advertise only the path that it's currently using for forwarding. And what that means is that nobody is going to offer Hari an alternate path to the destination. And thus, if the link between MIT and Hari fails, Hari's going to know no path to MIT and be forced to drop not only his own traffic, but that of Peter and AT&T as well, leading Hari to think maybe he shouldn't have left that cushy academic job after all. And leaving Peter thinking maybe he shouldn't have gotten into business with Hari. Now, eventually, Hari's going to send a withdrawal of this path. As a result, AT&T and Peter will move to alternate paths. AT&T will advertise this alternate path to Hari, and traffic will flow normally again. However, in the meantime, AT&T, Peter, and Hari all saw significant packet loss to the destination. So how are we going to use failover paths to solve this problem? So remember that with BGP, an AS will advertise only its current path, and thus it's going to advertise an alternate path only after some link on that current path fails. With our modified version of BGP, which we call RBGP, we're going to advertise these alternate paths, which we call failover paths, before the link fails. Let's see how that works in our example. So before the link fails, AT&T is going to advertise to Hari the alternate path through Sprint as a failover path. And thus, when the link fails, Hari can immediately forward on the failover path, sending traffic to AT&T, who recognizes that the only path he advertised to Hari was this failover path through Sprint, and so he needs to forward that traffic through Sprint, who will then forward it onto the destination. And thus, we've completely avoided packet loss for AT&T, Peter, and Hari. And now recognize that all three of these ASs have a usable path to the destination, even though this may not be their final converge path. And this leads to a natural breakdown of the problem into two challenges. The first challenge is to minimize the number of failover paths advertised while ensuring that all ASs have some usable path to the destination throughout convergence. And the second challenge is to allow ASs to move from this usable path to the final converged path without creating forwarding loops in the process. So let's first look at the first challenge, minimizing the number of failover paths. We've made this relatively bold claim that we can do this just like BGP with advertising only one path per neighbor, either the current path or a failover path. To see how this might be possible, let's focus in on AT&T in our example again. Now remember, with BGP, you can advertise only the current path. And since AT&T's current path is the path through Hari, he advertises this path through Hari to Sprint, he advertises it to Peter, and he even advertises it back to Hari. Now, while Hari can't use this path, it does serve to indicate to Hari that AT&T doesn't have a usable path for him right now, and he shouldn't forward through AT&T. But what we do is take this path advertisement with Hari can't use and replace that with a failover path, which can still serve the same purpose of indicating to Hari that AT&T doesn't have a normal current path to offer him, but he does have this failover path to offer him. Which leads us to the insight of replacing the path advertised to your downstream AS, to the AS through whom you're forwarding, with a failover path. But we still need to ensure that all ASs have a usable path throughout the convergence process with only this limited set of failover paths. Let's see how that might be possible. To do that, let's focus here on what path AT&T wants to advertise. Its current path is the path in yellow, and the three gray paths represent the possible alternative path, which could be advertised as a failover path. And it's going to advertise this failover path to its downstream AS, John in this case. So if the link between Bob and John fails, AT&T can happily advertise the path on the left. And in that case, traffic will be forwarded to John, who will then forward it on the failover path around to Bob and down to the destination. However, if the link between Bob and Joe fails, this path is no longer sufficient. If AT&T advertises the path on the right, though, to John, John can then re-advertise that failover path to Bob, and thus traffic from AT&T will be forwarded down to Bob, who will then forward that traffic along the failover path to the destination. And by now, I'm sure you can see that if the link between Joe and the destination goes down, AT&T must choose the path on the left, and traffic will be forwarded accordingly. And you can probably also see that what the decision AT&T needs to make is to choose the most disjoint path. He needs to choose the failover path, which shares the fewest links with his yellow primary path. Notice that this green path on the left, the most disjoint, is the only path which shares no links with AT&T's current yellow path. Now, it may seem somewhat obvious that this most disjoint path protects against the largest possible link failures. But it's much stronger than this. If AT&T is even able to advertise many failover paths, even if it was able to advertise all the possible failover paths, the most disjoint path is equivalent from the perspective of ensuring usable paths to advertising all possible failover paths. And it's this key insight that allows us to ensure all ASs have a usable path while advertising only a very limited set of failover paths. And so we use this to build RBGP's advertisement rule, which is to advertise to all neighbors normally like BGP, except we advertise to the downstream AS as a failover path, the path most disjoint from the current path. And then using that insight, we're able to prove that when a link fails, the AS upstream of the downlink will know a fail, the AS immediately upstream of the downlink will know a failover path as long as it knows a path of convergence, as long as it hasn't become disconnected from the network. And this AS upstream of the downlink knowing the failover path is in fact sufficient to ensure that all ASs have a usable path, thus meeting our first challenge. However, we're not done yet because the ASs still need to transition from this usable path to the final converged path without creating forwarding loops. To see what I mean by this, let's look at our example again. So when the link fails, Hari will immediately move to the failover path. And at this point, we've avoided all packet loss. But now as we move from this state to the final converged state, Hari is going to send out a withdrawal to AT&T and Peter. And as Peter is making this decision of which path to move to, at this point, the path through Sprint and the path through AT&T look equally good to him because he's unaware that AT&T's path is no longer available. And thus, Peter may decide to move to the path through AT&T. Similarly, AT&T may decide to move to the path through Peter, creating a routing loop in the process. And we solve this problem by looking at the insight that if AT&T and Peter actually knew that the link between Hari and MIT was down, they might be able to avoid using each other's paths. And so we use the solution of advertising root cause information. To see what I mean by this, Hari will include some little bit of information that indicates that the link between Hari and MIT is down when he advertises the withdrawal to AT&T and Peter. And thus, when AT&T, for example, is making this decision, Because BGP advertises the full path vector to the destination, he can recognize that the path he last heard from Peter contains this downlink, and as a result, is no longer available, and thus avoid using that path. Peter can do the same, and thus we avoid all routing loops. And this use of root cause information actually provides some other significant benefits as well. Past work has used this idea to show that it can reduce convergence time and reduce the number of updates. However, we're the first to prove that this root cause information can be used to guarantee that no forwarding loops will form during convergence. And thus, we can take our idea of advertising the most disjoint path to the downstream AS to guarantee all ASs have a usable path and combine it with this idea of root cause information, which allows us to avoid forwarding loops as we move from the usable path to the final converged path. And from these, we can build our final theorem, which is that no ASs will see BGP cause packet loss as long as they will have a path of convergence. Which is to say, no ASs will become disconnected as long as the underlying network is connected, thus meeting our original goal. So how well does this actually work in practice? In order to run this at a full internet scale, we built an AS level simulation over the full internet. We used a 24,000 node AS graph, which we built from RouteView's BGP data. And we used modern inference algorithms to annotate each of the links in this graph with customer provider or peer-to-peer relationships. In our first experiment, we look at the case where a dual homed AS loses one of its links to the internet. And then we look at the percentage of all the other ASs in the network which transiently lose their connection to this destination. That is, they have a connection to this destination after convergence, but lose their connection for some period during convergence. And we run this for all dual homed ASs. And what we find is that averaged across all dual homed ASs, when we take down one of the links to that dual home destination, 22% of the other ASs in the network will lose their connection to that destination. And when we run the same experiment with RBGP, we find that our guarantees do hold, and that RBGP reduces this 22% down to zero. Now, RBGP has used this, and thus RBGP eliminates all transient disconnection. Now, RBGP has used this idea of most disjoint paths. However, it's possible that most disjoint paths may not be compliant with a given AS's BGP routing policies. For example, if I'm currently routing through one peer and my most disjoint path is through another peer, I may not want to advertise this path from the other peer, from one peer to another. However, we believe that most ASs will still be willing to do this for two reasons. One is that they're doing it largely to protect their own traffic. They're offering these failover paths to the AS whom they're currently routing through, whom they're currently entrusting with the delivery of their packets. And additionally, these paths will only be used for a temporary period of time during convergence. Nonetheless, it's still interesting to ask the question of what if we consider only policy-compliant paths and then choose the most disjoint among these? And we find, in fact, that this still does quite well, reducing the 22% down to 1.4%, eliminating 94% of the disconnection, and leading us to believe that policy-compliant failover paths may be sufficient in practice. So far we've talked in the context of a single link failure. And in fact, all of our proofs hold only for the case where BGP is able to converge between link failures. Nonetheless, it's interesting to ask the question of what happens if multiple links fail simultaneously. To do this, we again look at the case where a dual home destination loses one of its links, and then we randomly choose some other second link in the network to fail. And what we find might be a little bit surprising, which is that the results are essentially exactly the same. In fact, in general, there's so many links on the internet that multiple link failures are generally unlikely to interact badly with each other. Really, the only substantive difference between these two is that we went from zero with a capital Z to 0%, some very small number that we just round down to zero in this case. So, fine, randomly chosen links may not interact badly, but what if we consider some worst-case scenario where some correlated set of links fail at the same time? So, to do that, we fail a link on the current path to a dual home destination, and at the same time, we fail a link on the corresponding failover path. To understand what I mean by that, consider Hari here, whose current path goes directly to the destination, and whose failover path is this yellow path. So we simultaneously fail this first link with some randomly chosen link on its failover path. And what we find here is that, again, averaged across all dual home destinations, 33% of the other ASs in the network lose connection to our destination. When we run this with RBGP, with only policy compliant paths, this reduces to 12%. And we run it with the full version of RBGP, with most disjoint paths, this reduces down to 7%. And thus, we eliminate 80% of the disconnection, even in this worst case of failures on both the current and the failover path. So, in conclusion, I've told you that we're in this ridiculous state now where even with all the redundancy in the internet, BGP leaves ASs without a connection to each other when a link fails for tens of seconds up to minutes. And I've described to you RBGP, which uses the simple idea of advertising failover paths to guarantee no packet loss, and to provide this guarantee while advertising only one path per neighbor. And our simulations show that we reduce the percentage of disconnected ASs from 22% down to zero. And in fact, this protocol is quite practical since it requires only a few small changes to BGP. And thus, we're currently working with Cisco on the feasibility of prototyping this in one of their routers. Thank you very much.
David Anderson, Carnegie Mellon. Very fun. I'm trying to get a feel for the bigger picture of what effect this will actually have on end-to-end reliability. I'm trying to get a feel for what kind of effect this will really have on end-to-end availability. And it strikes me that there are still little things like the time it takes BGP to detect the failure of the primary link in the first place before it can actually begin using the failover path.
Yeah, actually, there's some work going on at sort of the NANOG level on or I guess the IETF level, really, on this problem, where they're trying to set up something that works not just for BGP, but for all the routing protocols in the stack to allow you to very quickly detect the physical connection failures by using some sort of like heartbeat-type pings mm-hmm. that happen like, you know, at the every, you know, 10-millisecond kind of time frame.
Gotcha. Do you have a feel for what those times are in current systems and how that compares to the BGP convergence time?
The times of how long it takes right now, you're saying?
I mean, BGP has a hold down timer, for instance, that's about 30 seconds. And so I'm trying to understand the order of magnitude of how long we have to wait before your system kicks in versus how long we have to wait before convergence kicks in.
Okay, that's a very good question. So there's a few ways to answer that, and a lot of this gets to, you know, part of the reason we're working with Cisco on a lot of the practical details here, right? So the first answer is that our system guarantees that the router immediately above the downlink will know a failover path, will know some path to the destination. So even if BGP's hold timer prevents it from, say, advertising out to prevent if the link just flaps from you generating a bunch of spurious advertisements, you can still move to that failover path immediately with no cost.
Once you know the link has failed.
What'd you say? Once you know that the link has failed, right. And then And the link failure can be detected by these other techniques that they're working on, at, you know, on the order of magnitude of, you know, tens of milliseconds.
Cool. Thank you.
Jay LaPro, Utah. This seems really promising. Is there, do you have any idea if there's a problem with when the failover, I'm concerned about most just joint paths with correlated failures, which happen, right, ending up with, you know, an undue amount of traffic, which will so overload them that they end up, you know, being so lossy that you don't gain as much as you'd think here. Is that a problem in the, have you studied that at all in the real topologies, or you know why this isn't a problem?
So we haven't looked at this problem in detail, but in general, most of the advantage comes from getting a failover path from your provider. And so most of these most disjoint paths are paths that go up to a tier one and then back down to the destination through some other path. And so while it's possible that they may have links that get overloaded, you're generally not sending this through some tiny ISP. You're sending it back through the core of the internet, which hopefully has enough capacity.
Jonathan Durg, University of Utah. So have you done any look, have you looked at all at incremental adoption? So what kinds of benefits would there be if only, you know, half the AIS has adopted this, or only 10% of the AIS has adopted this?
So actually, we're working on an extension to this work, which focuses on the intra-domain case right now. And in fact, that's sort of the extreme of incremental adoption. And if you ask a router vendor, it's the only answer to incremental adoption, is that a single AIS needs to see benefit from this, even if no other AISs deploy it. And we find, actually, that you can provide significant benefit even if just a single AIS deploys it within routers within their own AS. This paper doesn't focus on that, but our follow-on work does.
Hi, Dave Moss from Microsoft Research. So I understand how basically this failover path could give, in your example, the hairy AS an alternate path in its control plane that it knows will work. But if we're actually trying to forward pass along that in its data plane and send them back to AT&T, which neither its control plane nor its data plane has reconverged, isn't its data plane just going to send those packets right back to the hairy AS?
So the way we do this is by taking advantage of virtual interfaces at the router level. Mm-hmm. And so two routers will have between them two virtual interfaces, or two virtual connections, if you will, two virtual interfaces connected by two virtual LAN connections. And as a result, packets on the failover path will be sent along the failover virtual interface, received on the failover virtual interface. And so the router on AT&T's side can recognize that those packets are on the failover path and forward them accordingly.
But that means that that has to be true throughout all of each AS's network, where there has to be...
All throughout what did you say?
So let's now go to the next hop. So the border router in the AT&T network is going to get this packet's know, get these packets back and know that it shouldn't immediately just turn around and send them back down to Harry. But if it hands this to any other router in the AT&T network, that router in the AT&T network is going to hand it back to the border router closer to Harry, because its data plane isn't just...
Right. So the reason that that border router closest to Harry was able to decide that there was this failover path available is because some other router advertised it, that path to him.
Right, but I'm saying once you're back inside the AT&T network, you've lost all the state that this packet should be on the failover path.
Right, okay, good. I see what you're saying. So the point is that when the packet arrives on that failover virtual interface on the first hop, AT&T knows to forward it then on the failover path, it again forwards it on the failover virtual interface. And so we have this sort of hop-by-hop forwarding on a failover virtual interface until it reaches Sprint, who then just forwards it normally because it's its normal path.
So it seems like that's really the major change you're asking for. Not the change isn't in the control plane. It's that this is a really major change in the data plane, where you effectively now have to have these sort of normal path and or way of indicating packets that are forwarding along normal path and packets that are forwarding on an alternate path. So you effectively are creating a new tunneling mechanism that doesn't involve changing the packet headers necessarily, but you need some kind of tunneling mechanism there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We need some kind of tunneling mechanism. In fact, there's a number of ways to implement it. This could be implemented with MPLS tunnels. This could be done with the virtual interface idea that I talked about. And in fact, AESs already do this virtual interface thing a whole lot in general at peering points, where they connect to each other and they set up essentially virtual connections between each other. And when they receive packets on a given virtual connection, they apply some policy to them because they have, you know, a certain policy that they're relationship with that AS represents. So this is not that far from what AS's already do today from that perspective.
Yeah. Just a quick question. I didn't see any discussion of IBGP types of things.
And in fact,
claims about no loops, but in fact, the routers inside the AS that could learn about this at different times, right? So couldn't you have loops there?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's, in fact, what the big question that our follow-on work focuses on is exactly that inter-domain case.
Just one other quick question about recovery. So I didn't see any discussion about sort of what happens when the link comes back up. And just in light of sort of Griffin's work on this BGP wedgie thing where some routers, they choose their backup paths, then now links come back up. But because policy and the way routes are advertised when the paths come back up, some of the routers don't actually go back and switch to the
right.
Primary.
And so,
do you have that problem? Or?
Well, so the way we solve this problem is that we actually indicate whether a path is a failover path or a primary path. And we ensure that AS is the sort of standard BGP decision algorithm becomes choose primary or sort of current paths, non-failover paths, before you choose failover paths. Only choose a failover path if you have no current path.
Okay. Just one really quick question. Really quick. So the root cause thing, actually, you talked about in terms of like trying to keep
avoid
these ASs from choosing each other, but that looked really similar to work from Minnesota, from J.D. Chandrakishore and Zhili Zhang. But I didn't see you cited that. So.
So people have looked at this root cause idea before. A few different groups have looked at it.
Right.
And they've looked at it in the context, at least as far as I know. Maybe you know something else. As far as I know, in the context of reducing convergence time and reducing the number of updates. And
they
we look at it here in the context of avoiding
They were doing
loops.
Convergence time, right.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks. I was...